You're listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Cafella.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Well, the star, the sun, and the moon all seem to be aligned. We're having zero mechanical difficulties, so hey, technology is with us today. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Our guest today is Laura Fleming of Stradling, Yoka, Carlson, and Routh, and we're going to be talking about HR and social media. But hold on, we'll get to that in just a moment. If you're listening to this show live, then you are on octalkradio.net. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. Also, be sure to check out our archives of our other great shows with some fantastic guests. Well, let's get to today's show. Laura Fleming. Laura is a shareholder in the firm's labor and employment practice. Her expertise includes advice and counsel, internal investigation, union arbitrations, government agency audits, and litigation defense for single plaintiff and class action matters. She has provided employment law support to a broad range of clients, including several Fortune 100 companies. She's a featured speaker and author on human resources and employment law issues. And she's conversant in Mandarin Chinese. We will not be testing her on that today. She earned her BA and JD degrees from Harvard University. She practiced in Boston and Shanghai prior to moving to Orange County in 2001. So join me in welcoming Laura Fleming. Laura?
Hi, Doug. Good to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you here today. Let me just share with the audience, I had the privilege of listening to Laura give a presentation on this same topic at the Center Club a week or two ago, and it was, you know, just so fantastic. I had to get her on our show, and thank you for making room for us in your schedule, Laura.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my first time on OC Talk Radio, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll make sure it isn't your last time on OC Talk Radio. Well, look, to get started, a couple of routine questions. Tell our audience a little bit about what you did before what you're doing now.
Okay. Well, I'm a labor and employment attorney right now. And originally when I was in college, I thought that I was going to be a counseling psychologist, and I actually did some graduate coursework toward that degree, thinking about becoming a counselor, and then ultimately decided to shift gears and go to law school. I figured that, you know, a law degree would allow me to help people in a different way, because I was very young and idealistic, and my goal was to help people. And so I ended up becoming, instead of a counseling psychologist, I became a counselor at law. And it's been a very rewarding career for me, as it is for anybody that likes to read and write and speak. A law career has been a good career.
Well, I can't help but asking, explain the Shanghai episode. Boy, that sounds so unusual to me.
Yeah, sure. Well, that was a great experience. So in undergraduate, I was a linguistics major, and I studied Chinese during undergrad and also during law school. And then I had the opportunity to travel to Shanghai and live there for 2 years. So I was actually doing some contract work for a big law firm, a big American law firm out in Shanghai. And then I did volunteer work at one of the orphanages out in Shanghai as well. So that was a very meaningful experience for me that allowed me to, you know, both keep my foot in the door in the legal profession and also fulfill my goal of doing some charitable work and helping people.
Well, you are certainly a multifaceted person, and from what I can see, what a wonderful balance you've achieved in your life, and congratulations on that.
Well, you know, it's always a work in progress, so.
That's the truth. Well, tell us a little bit about what you spend your time on now, your firm, and what your specialty is there.
Sure. So Stradling is a full-service law firm. We represent businesses and executives and entrepreneurs in all of their legal needs. So, for example, we have a corporate department, a tax department, a litigation department. And my particular specialty is labor and employment law. I help employers, and it can be, you know, you can have one employee all the way up to hundreds or hundreds of thousands of employees. And so I help with different problems that occur in the workplace. You know, anytime you have employees, we're all human beings, and we're going to have problems and frictions. And so I help employers resolve disputes with their employees. And I also help them comply with some of the heavy regulation that modern companies experience. Especially in California, there are a lot of employment laws and regulations, and I help companies stay in compliance, stay out of trouble with the different government agencies.
Gee whiz, I never heard before that California had a lot of regulations.
News to you.
News to me. Well, that won't be my takeaway for today. Well, look, one of the questions before we get into the meat of our talk, one of the questions I like to ask all of our guests, and I kind of warned you ahead of time, is what particular experience or key lesson have you gone through in life that sort of shaped your guiding principle of who you are and how you do business, how you interface with people? What can you share with us?
Well, Doug, I think, unfortunately, our key lessons are often learned through suffering and difficulty. So, you know, I would have to say when I came back to Orange County in 2001, it was right after the 9/11 tragedy, and I had just become a single mom, and I had three small children aged 1, 2, and 4, and I also was starting to work full-time at a law firm and all the pressures that that entails, and that first year was very difficult for me. In terms of learning to balance, you know, the needs of my family, the needs of a demanding law firm job. And I just really learned to take things day by day. You know, they have the Lord's Prayer that says, give us this day our daily bread. And that was where I really learned, okay, just, you know, Lord, give me the strength to take it one day at a time. Sometimes attorneys, we like to overthink and overplan and overcontrol our schedules. And I think it's good sometimes just to say, okay, I just need the strength for today. I'm going to take this one day at a time.
Well, thank you for sharing that. What a great lesson. And, hey, attorneys aren't the only one guilty of that problem. We all struggle with it.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's get into social media and HR. You know, this is an area where people are really becoming very, very frustrated. You know, we've got some people, particularly in the HR fields, in the workplace, supervisors that aren't that up to date, aren't that digitally connected, and they're dealing with people that can't get unconnected. And so we've got this almost built-in conflict going on today, and nobody seems to know what the rules are, what the law says, what's normal, what isn't normal. Where do you want to start with that?
Well, I think we can start with just the prevalence of social media in the workplace. And I think you're correct that sometimes that you have a conflict between the supervisors and the employees. Especially the millennial generation is very connected. They can't imagine a world where, you know, they don't have Facebook and Twitter at their fingertips on their smartphones. And then a lot of times you have supervisors who may be a little older, not from the same generation, and, you know, they want to stick to the old rules about, you know, you must be focused on business at all times and you know, what are you doing on social media? There was a survey recently in salary.com, and they surveyed about 3,200 people, and the majority, 64%, admitted to visiting websites unrelated to their work on a daily basis. You know, 41% of the time wasters went to Facebook, 37% were on LinkedIn, probably trolling for a new job. And so you have a lot of people online a lot of the time. And in addition, it's not just going online while you're at work. You know, work can also infiltrate to your life at home. So, for example, you could be answering emails or even doing work-related social media during off hours. And that's also a challenge to employers because they need to figure out how to compensate employees for the time that they spend when they're not physically present at work. So social media is definitely pervasive and a force to be reckoned with in the workplace.
And it really has kind of blurred that line of when I'm at work and when I'm not at work, which for many people is difficult to deal with. They want to go back to the old-fashioned definition that, you know, I own you 8 to 5.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of posed some questions. Can I be fired for Facebooking? Should employees Google job applications? Can employers ask for social media passwords? Can I take my Twitter account with me? Tell us a little bit about some of those things because they kind of open up the conversation.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the biggest issues that employers are facing today is what happens when an employee posts something inappropriate on their Facebook account, and can they be disciplined or fired for that? And this has just broken onto the scene in recent years. One example is Ashley Payne, who was a former high school teacher in Georgia, and she happened to have a Facebook account, posted a picture of herself with some alcoholic beverages in hand, and the quote, "I'm at crazy bitch bingo with my bitches." And what happened was apparently someone got a hold of this Facebook post and forwarded it to the principal of her school. And she went in to talk with the principal and was confronted about the Facebook, and there's some dispute about what happened. But ultimately, she resigned from her position over it. And then she sued the school, you know, claiming that she had been wrongfully terminated and that there was, you know, nothing on her Facebook page that should have caused her to be terminated from her position. So sometimes when I tell this story that did attract national media attention, you know, I'll ask, was it legal to fire Ashley Payne for what she put on her Facebook? And I'll get a variety of responses to that question. And then a kind of a related question is, okay, even if it was legal to fire Ms. Payne, you know, was it a good idea? Should she have been fired? And this kind of goes to the heart of employment law and some of the things that I do, which is when can you fire an employee? What kind of conduct is protected and what's not protected? The key concept here is that most employees are going to be employed at will. And what at will means is that the employer can terminate the employee and the employee can also resign at any time for any reason. And so unless you have some employment agreement, like you're an executive with an employment agreement that says you can only be terminated for cause, or maybe you're a union employee and you have a collective bargaining agreement that says you can only be terminated for cause. But all the rest of us, we can be fired at any time with certain exceptions. And the exceptions are protected categories, activities that are protected by law. And the question is, what activities on Facebook are protected by law and what activities are not protected and would leave the employee open to being fired? So you were at the presentation last week, and so you have an idea of what some of the protected categories are, but basically it's these civil rights categories like race, religious creed, color, national origin, ancestry, physical or mental disability, medical condition, marital status, sex, age, sexual orientation, and so forth. So the idea is that if you put any of this protected information about your race or disability or medical condition online, and your employer fires you for that, then that would not be legal. That would be discriminatory, and you would have a potential lawsuit against your employer. Looking back at Ashley Payne, you know, unfortunately for her, drinking adult beverages and crazy bitch bingo are not protected activities. And therefore, you know, if she was employed at a private school and was at will, then they would have the right to fire her for that Facebook post. Now, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, so information on Facebook isn't protected, doesn't have a blanket
That's
protection.
Right.
But it's just certain kinds of that fall into this discriminatory information.
That's right. Information on Facebook is not protected for its own sake. It's only if the information falls into a protected category.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Now, a little twist is that, you know, because Ashley Payne was probably a unionized public school teacher, then there would be a higher standard for her termination. Was there a good cause? Did her Facebook picture constitute good cause for her termination? And that would be more of a judgment call and up to the school board and any review board that's reviewing the decision surrounding her termination.
Okay. So Laura, as an example, if I'm in an HR department in a company and I'm looking at some applicants for an open job and I'm reading their Facebook pages, am I kind of opening the door to a problem even though I may not be using protected information to make a decision one way or the other?
You know, Doug, there's a couple problems that you brought up here. You know, first, there's a lot of employers that will Google their job candidates and see what kind of information is online. And, you know, that's almost expected that your prospective employer is going to do that. And, you know, it would be almost a shame as an employer not to Google your job applicants and see what you can find out about them that might be helpful to your evaluation process. At the same time, if you find information that's protected, you know, maybe they posted some information about their sexual orientation or a disability that they have, then the challenge is not to let that protected information bleed over into the employment decision. Now, there have been some other cases involving Facebook where the employers will actually ask the applicant right there in the interview to turn over their Facebook passwords. And so that's a potential, you know, that has been a big controversy lately.
Yeah, I can't even believe that one. I mean, that one just really stunned me when I heard you say that last week. One, that an employer would ask, and two, that I would even consider, you know, wanting to work for somebody that wanted to, you know, sort of invade what I would consider my privacy that way.
Yeah, so that's, you know, kind of, it's pretty big brotherish for an employer to ask for private passwords to social media. And in fact, you know, Facebook has come out the strongest against this practice. If you look at the Facebook privacy section, it talks about how they feel that this practice of employers asking employees to reveal their passwords is, they call it alarming. They say if you're a Facebook user, you should never have to share your password, let anyone access your account, or do anything that might jeopardize the security of your account or violate the privacy of your friends. So Facebook has come out very strongly against that practice, and so has the ACLU. The ACLU is fighting for social media privacy laws right now. And, in fact, some states, including Illinois, Maryland, and California, have also started the process of drafting legislation to protect employees from having to reveal their personal social media passwords to their employer. So right this minute, it may not be an unlawful practice, but there is some definite movement against that practice.
Okay. Well, look, before we continue, let's just take a break. Our producer is standing by with a commercial, and we'll be right back with you in just a minute, Laura.
That sounds good.
Thanks.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com. Succession-strategies.com. Succession planning for your family's continued success.
Okay, hopefully you didn't go to sleep during that last commercial. We're talking to Laura Fleming with Stradling, and we're talking about HR and social media. Laura, fascinating information. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, good to be here, Doug. I'm having a good time talking with you about these important issues.
Well, they are. And, you know, we've kind of talked about Facebook from the standpoint of the employer and how they have to be careful that they don't use information that's protected or in protected categories. What about the individual? What are they allowed or not allowed to say on Facebook? Can I complain about, you know, my job, my fellow employees, or, you know, what's the limitation there?
Yeah. Well, I think that sometimes there is some confusion about what kind of conduct is protected on Facebook. And some employees will say, well, hey, what about my right to free speech? Don't I have the right to say whatever I want to say on Facebook or anywhere else without being, retaliated against by my employer? And the important thing to remember is that First Amendment rights apply only to government action, so they don't actually apply to private employees. And there was a case out of California that kind of tested that theory. Basically, there was a woman named Grinzi who was a case manager for San Diego Hospice Corporation. And she was involved with this Women's Garden Circle, which was an alleged pyramid scheme. And so basically it's a women's only club, and you have to cough up $5,000 and you give it to the women that are above you on the pyramid, and then ultimately when someone gets her $40,000 out of this scheme, then they recruit other women to join. And so the hospice corporation didn't like the fact that she was involved with this group, and they actually terminated her employment. So she sued for a violation of her First Amendment rights, saying she should have the right to associate with whoever she wants to without being feared of being fired. And actually the California Supreme Court said no, that First Amendment rights only apply to the government. And so the government cannot jail you or fine you for exercising your free speech rights. However, your private employer can definitely fire you, because we're talking about two different rights. You know, you have the right to be free from discrimination or harassment based on a civil rights protected category with your private employer, but you don't have the kind of free speech rights that you have with respect to the government. Sometimes employees will also say, you know, what about my right to privacy? Don't I have the right to keep my personal life private? And again, it can be deceptive. You know, you may think that you're in your own room working on your computer or your cell phone late at night, and you have this feeling of privacy with what you post online. But obviously the reality is if it's posted on a public forum, you really have no right to privacy with regard to information that you've put out there in the public eye. There are some laws, like the Stored Communications Act, that protect against unauthorized access. So if you have a password-protected account, something like that, then your employer is prevented from, you know, hacking into your private social media accounts without your permission. But basically, if you put it out there in public, then you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, the last category that you were kind of hinting at, I think, was, you know, what about complaints about your employer?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. So you were kind of leading up to that. So basically, there's a government agency that's not very well known, although it's coming more into the public light recently, called the National Labor Relations Board. And the National Labor Relations Board involves the right of employees to unionize and to otherwise band together and complain about their working conditions. And so this National Labor Relations Board just recently started getting involved with Facebook cases. There was a case back in October of 2010 that kind of started the whole ball rolling, where there was a paramedic, and she worked for American Medical Response. They're a national ambulance company, and she had a very bad day at work, and she posted some negative personal attacks on her Facebook page against her supervisor. She called him a jerk and a scumbag, and she said, you know, love how the company allows a 17 to be a supervisor, and a 17 is paramedic code for a psychiatric patient. And so, you know, her employer, the ambulance company, got upset and they fired her. And she complained in the National Labor Relations Board. And the National Labor Relations Board came back and said, look, you know, actually, you know, this is social media. She was posting on her Facebook, and she had coworkers that were supporting her, encouraging her, commenting on her Facebook page. She was complaining about her supervisor. That potentially is protected concerted activity, employees banding together to complain about their working conditions. It's potentially protected under the National Labor Relations Act, the same as other union-type activity. And so the National Labor Relations Board has been very active in this area of Facebook firings, kind of swooping in and telling employers to basically to back off. You can't prohibit employees from banding together and complaining about their working conditions on social media.
So as long as there is a group of employees banding together, complaining, they are, in a sense, a protected activity. Is that correct?
That's right, and that is the distinction, is the group of employees, because there was another case involving a bartender who had a bad day, and he had a conversation on Facebook with his stepsister where he was complaining that he hadn't had a raise in 5 years. He was doing the waitress's work without tips, and he said, you know, some other unsavory things like, you know, the bar's customers are all rednecks, and I hope they choke on glass as they drive home drunk, which was not very professional. In that case, the restaurant did fire him for his comments, And the key aspect of that case was that he basically he was a loser. He didn't have any friends who were coworkers. None of his fellow employees posted before or after. It's just him and his stepsister. There are no employee meetings, no attempt to initiate group action, no effort to take the bartender's complaints to management. And so the idea is, the moral of the story, if you're going to complain about your employer on Facebook, you have to do it up big. You have to get all your coworkers to like your post and comment and make a big stink and have meetings, and then your activity is probably protected. But if it's just you complaining about a bad day to your stepsister, then it's probably not going to be protected under the National Labor Relations Act.
So I have visions as soon as we go off the air of people rushing to their computers to send out requests for people to like their negative comments about their employment situation so they're
That's
protected.
Right. That's right. That's how to get it protected. So, I mean, this is a weird world. It's kind of like the Wild West, and the law is still developing. There are some kind of perverse incentives that can come up when you're trying to make your way in a new legal landscape.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned that I'd like you to share with the audience is this issue of what do I own on the internet? And now, do I own my own Facebook page? But if it's a company page, is it whose is it? What about my Twitter account?
Yeah.
I mean, in some cases, these lines of ownership get kind of blurred, and these accounts turn into valuable assets over time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Doug. So many employers do use social media for their own marketing. Like, you see lots of companies that have Facebook pages, Twitter accounts, and then you also have, individuals, employees that have their personal Twitter or other accounts, and the line between personal and private can definitely blur. So there's a case involving PhoneDog.com, which is a site dedicated to news about cell phones. I guess there's enough news about cell phones that it merits an entire website now. And there is a guy called Noah Kravitz, and he began writing on Twitter using the name PhoneDog Noah. And I guess he was very popular, and he managed to amass about 17,000 followers under this PhoneDog Noah handle. And then in late 2010, he actually left PhoneDog and he changed his handle and no longer had the name PhoneDog in it. It was just at Noah Kravitz. And then they got embroiled in litigation, as somehow, you know, sometimes that happens when an employee leaves. And the company was making the argument that he had taken a valuable company asset with him by taking his Twitter account. And they said that his followers were worth $2.50 a month each. And I'm not sure exactly how they came to that valuation, but basically they were saying that Noah owed the firm $42,500 a month for using, you know, each of these followers on his Twitter account. And you know, that it seems like they're probably overstating the value of this Twitter account. If you think about, you know, JetBlue has 1.7 million followers. Lady Gaga has over 12 million followers. You know, is Lady Gaga really worth $3.6 billion a year based solely on her Twitter account? So this lawsuit is still ongoing. We don't know the result yet. But I think the moral of the story is that if you're going to have employees doing work-related social media activities, that it's important to outline in writing up front, okay, whose account is this? Is this the employer's account or is this the employee's account? And what happens to the account when the employee leaves the company? And if you spell it all out in writing ahead of time, you know, that can save you from the disputes later on.
Well, look, you know, on a lighter side, for those of our audience who are still working crossword puzzles, the term docid, you want to share what that means? I haven't heard it before until you used it.
Okay, a little a little vocabulary lesson here. Actually, it's a the word is doosed. D-O-O.
Okay.
Yeah, D-O-O-C-E-D. And so basically, the term deuced means to lose your job because of your website. And it was coined by a woman, Heather Armstrong, in 2002. So this was, she was a pioneer at the forefront of losing your job because of what you do online. And it's named after her blog, deuced.com. And so basically she says that, you know, she was in Los Angeles. She started her website as a hobby. She launched it in February 2001 to write about pop culture, music, her life as a single woman. And then she says a year later she was fired from her job for her website because she had written stories about people in the workplace. And her advice is, be ye not so stupid. She put that in all caps. Never write about work on the Internet unless your boss knows and sanctions the fact that you're writing about work on the Internet. And fortunately for Heather Armstrong, you know, her blog went on to become so popular that she never had to have a day job again, so it all worked out for her. But, you know, even now you'll see, like if you go on the Huffington Post or other websites, you'll see 13 tweets that got people canned or, you know, 13 Facebook posts that got people fired. So it's actually very common now for people's indiscretions online to cause them trouble at work.
So deuced is the right terminology. Okay.
Yeah, deuced.
Well, look, a lot of that is kind of, I mean, it's all very interesting. Some of it's very, very frightening. So what advice do you have for employers? Is there something specific, some list of actions they should be taking?
Yeah. Well, there are things that you can do. The first thing is to have a social media policy. So I do recommend that employers have a social media policy, and it can serve a number of important purposes, especially if the company uses social media in its own marketing. Then you can work with the marketing department and have guidelines for how are we going to use social media in a way that is consistent with our brand and complies with the regulations that apply to marketing, like the FTC or the FDA if you're in a pharmaceutical or medical device company, or other, you know, financial institutions that are highly regulated. And so, you know, it's very important for the marketing department, the legal department, to get together and come up with a social media policy specific to use of social media for work purposes. Now, on the other hand, where I come in is, you know, employees that are using social media for personal purposes, and a social media policy is also helpful there. You know, first of all, reinforcing the fact that when you're at work, you're working for the company, your time belongs to the company. So unless you're on break or off duty, you need to be focused on company-related work. You can also use your social media policy to protect your intellectual property. Say, hey, you know, you can't use company trademarks, or you can't upload pictures of company products or reveal company proprietary information online. That's against our policy, and you could be disciplined or terminated for that. And in addition, you know, unfortunately, people do use social media sometimes to harass each other. So you might have an employee that feels offended or discriminated against or harassed by something that someone said to her on Facebook, and that can bleed over into the workplace if the two people are coworkers. So your social media policy can also enforce your guidelines against harassment and say that, you know, you may not use social media to harass your coworkers in any way. You know, you need to at least have that much discretion and professionalism with what you post online. So I think that, you know, by having a good policy, you know, you can do a lot to set the expectations for your employees and let them know that you want them to participate in social media, but you want them to do it in a way that's not harmful to the company's interests or hurtful to each other.
Great advice, Laura. Great advice. Let me ask you this. The thought entered my mind as I was listening to you, whether I'm a private business person or a large company or maybe just an individual that's active in social media, is there some type of insurance that I should be carrying to protect me against this? I mean, you know, it's sort of like, you know, for my homeowner's thing, I've got to have it in case somebody trips on the steps or somebody cleaning the windows falls off a ladder. What about social media insurance protection?
Social media insurance protection. That's an interesting question. You know, there's lots of new insurance products out there, and so I'm sure that someone's going to develop something like that in the future. They have, if you're talking about employment-related exposure, you know, they have insurance for employment practices. So if you screw up and fire someone for social media activities where maybe you shouldn't have, then there are insurance carriers that have employment practices policies that'll come in and defend you. I think that, you know, there's other companies that can work on your social media reputation and, you know, check and see what pops up when people Google you or your company and help improve your online and social media profiles. And that's a type of insurance, too, you know, having a company that's dedicated to looking at your online reputation and trying to improve it.
Great, great advice. Well, I didn't mean to generate a new insurance product out there. It isn't that we don't have enough.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let me ask you this. I mean, with all of the scary situations that you run into, what's your personal level of involvement in social media, and what about your company? What things do you do or not do as a result of this exposure you have to the good and bad side?
Yeah. Well, I think that there are so many powerful tools available today, like LinkedIn is very powerful, Facebook, obviously very powerful, very important. The problem is that, you know, they are somewhat of a time sink, so you have to balance the time that you spend on your social media activities with your other responsibilities. But, you know, from a personal perspective, I like to keep my LinkedIn profile updated. It's helpful for connecting with people professionally. And then Facebook, I use Facebook mostly to keep track of my kids because I have a bunch of teenagers and they have Facebook accounts. And I like to keep an eye on them, see who their friends are, see what they're talking about online. But usually I'm a silent online presence in Facebook. I just use it to, you know, note and kind of file it away for future conversations because I'm always concerned if I get too intrusive on their Facebook accounts then they're going to defriend me and that would defeat the purpose. So,
yeah, it is a fine line as a parent, and I hear
right.
this from lots of parents, this concern about if I don't look, there could be trouble. If I do look and get too involved, they're going to just cut me out. So, you know, there is a balance there.
Yeah. So, but it's an excellent observation tool if you have kids to, you know, let them have a Facebook account and then watch it closely. So,
great advice. How about as a company? Is a company actively use social media?
You know, we have a great new CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, and she's in the process of revamping our website to try and take advantage of some of these social media activities. And there are several attorneys at my law firm that have blogs that are quite helpful. You know, I have a sort of a baby blog that I work on from time to time and trying to get that up to speed. You know, I'm a Generation X, so I'm not quite in the millennial generation. It doesn't come quite as naturally to me as to millennials, but I am striving to keep up and you know, just looking forward to getting more involved with social media over time.
Great. Well, look, as we get ready to wrap up here, I just want to make sure, is there anything else you wanted to talk about what we've touched on today or about your firm that I might have stepped over you in the conversation that you'd like to take a few minutes to expand on?
Well, Doug, I just really appreciate this opportunity to talk on OC Talk Radio. It's been a lot of fun. And any listener that was intrigued is welcome to contact me by email. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. L Fleming, 1M, LFLEMING, at SYCR.com. Or you're welcome to send me an invitation on LinkedIn, Laura Fleming. I'd be happy to respond to that as well. And just looking forward to keeping in touch and following these interesting trends. Again, you know, social media, it takes a little while for the law to catch up to some of these technological developments. And so just seeing how these things play out over the next couple years is going to be very interesting.
Okay, great. Laura, thank you very much for being with us today. And it's been a pleasure. Every time I hear you, I learn something new, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective business community.
Thanks a lot, Doug. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
All right. Well, we've been listening to Laura Fleming of Stradling, and if you tuned in late, check early next week. You'll be able to catch the podcast. We'll have it up on our site or on OC Talk Radio. What else? Well, let me tell you, it's kind of late because if you haven't already registered for the Orange County chapter of the ICF's meeting, it's going to start at 6 o'clock this evening. So you'd have to practically be in your car to get down there to Irvine and catch it. Going to be a great panel talking about turning prospects into clients. I just want to thank for a minute our sponsors. MBN Design does a great job of design, all levels of design. OCTalkRadio.net, of course, a sponsor that we wouldn't be able to communicate with you if we didn't have them. Thanks, Paul. And our newest sponsor, the Orange County Chapter of the International Coaching Federation. Well, I've appreciated you listening. Be sure to check out our website, The Coaching Perspective. You know, we have been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years, all under the banner of The Coaching Perspective, and our key focus is helping to create more effective teams. So we work with both existing and new management teams or project teams, and in all cases, we want to increase the productivity of the team and the individual members. So I'm a master certified coach, a past president of the International Orange County Chapter of the International Coach Federation, and it has been a pleasure talking with you today. We are going to have a fascinating guest next week, and I lost my notes. It's right here somewhere. Let me just tell you. Oh, boy, that's embarrassing. Okay, there we go. Janine McDonald of J9 Leading Solutions, and she's going to talk to us about change management. And boy, she is a spitfire. We're going to have an exciting conversation going there. This is really going to be something I'm looking forward to, since when do we get to go to work or deal with life without having to deal with change? And she's going to give us some tips on that. So thanks for joining us today. This is Doug Gefeller, The Coaching Perspective, signing off, hoping that we've given you information to help you make a better balance in your business and personal life.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, every week here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.